Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 25. Nityam Nirikshamananam Yad Api Dwarkaukasam Na Vitripyanti Hi Jushaha Shriyo Damanga Achutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Navatrupyanti Hidrisha Shriodamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Navatrupyanti Hidrisha Shriodamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Navatrupyanti Hidrisha Shriodamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Bhakti Dwarakaukasam Tripitranti Hidrisha Tamangamastam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Nirikshamananam Hidrisha Shriodamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Avitripyanti Hidrisha Shriyadamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Avitripyanti Hidrisha Shriyadamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Nityupyanti Hidrisha Shriyodamangamachutam Nityam Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Vitripyanti Hidrisha Shriodamangamachutam Vaishnavis Niksham Nirikshamananam Yadapi Dwarakaukasam Vitripyanti Hidrisha Chiradamayamachitam. Nityam. Regularly. Always. Nirikshamananam. Of those who look at him. Yet, although, api, in spite of, Dwarka Okasam, the inhabitants of Dwarka, na, never, vitriptyanti, satisfied, he, exactly, Jisha, sight, Shriha, beauties, Dhamma Angam, the bodily reservoir, Achutam, the infallible. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. Purport. When the ladies of the city of Dwarka got up on the roofs of their palaces, they never thought that they had previously many times seen the beautiful body of the infallible Lord. This indicates that they had no satiation in desiring to see the Lord. Anything material seen for a number of times ultimately becomes unattractive by the law of satiation. The law of satiation acts materially, but there is no scope for it in the spiritual realm. The word infallible is significant here because although the Lord has mercifully descended on earth, he is still infallible. The living entities are fallible because when they come in contact with the material world, they lack their spiritual identity, and thus the body materially obtained becomes subjected to birth, growth, transformation, situation, deterioration, and annihilation under the laws of nature. The Lord's body is not like that. He descends as he is and is never under the laws of the material modes. His body is the source of everything that be, the reservoir of all beauties beyond our experience. No one, therefore, is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations, and there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, and there is no limitation of the entourage of the Lord. He is the source of all and is limitless. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining here in its purport how when the ladies of the city of Dwarka would go up to the roofs of their palace, they never thought they had previously seen Krishna many times. And therefore, you know, it's not like they were up there. Who's coming? Krishna. Oh, we've seen him. nothing here. Let me go on with my household activities. You know, Srila Prabhupada mentions this law of satiation, which operates on the material level. So, you know, sometimes it's said familiarity breeds contempt. You know, that, you know, sometimes it happens of a man and a woman, at first they think, oh, she's so beautiful, he's so handsome, I can't see him enough. And then they start living together or getting married, and then soon they can't stand the sight of each other. Sometimes it happens like that, not always, but many times this law of satiation is operating. Sometimes, I mean, we experienced it yesterday with the Thanksgiving feast. Everything is very nice, but there's some limits to how much you can take. Of course, it's prasadam, so its qualities can be appreciated unlimitedly, but still, because, you know, we have material bodies, there's some satiation. But for these devotees, these ladies in the city of Dwarka, they never could get enough of seeing Krishna, even though they'd seen him many times before. They were still enthusiastic to see him. And even more enthusiastic to see Krishna were the gopis of Vrindavan. They would get a chance to see when Krishna was present in Vrindavan. He would go daily to the forest with his cowherd boyfriends, and the ladies of Vrindavan, the gopis, they would gather each morning to watch Krishna as he went with his cows and calves and cowherd boyfriends into the forest. And then they would feel some separation during the day, and they would become very enlivened when Krishna would return in the evening with the cows and his cowherd boyfriends. But even when they were seeing Krishna, they were so enthusiastic to see him that they cursed Lord Brahma for making their eyes with eyelids that would blink. So, you know, we can see that our eyelids blink, and, you know, for a fraction of a second, our vision is blocked. So they couldn't tolerate even not being able to see Krishna for that tiny fraction of a second. And that led them to say about Lord Brahma, what kind of creator are you that you've made eyes with eyelids that blink and that deny us this opportunity to see Krishna for even a fraction of a second? So this blinking is called nimisha, but Lord Vishnu, his eyes never blink, and therefore one of the names of Lord Vishnu is Animisha. Naimisha Kshetre, the Srimad Bhagavatam was being spoken at the Naimisharanya forest to the sages who were gathered there. And this place is called Animisha Kshetra, the place of Lord Vishnu, whose eyes don't blink. And sometimes the word Animisha is used for the demigods in general, not just Lord Vishnu. So, said the demigods, they don't have blinking eyelids either. So they would be able to perceive Krishna without any interruption. So this is the nature of devotional service, that if one is sincerely performing devotional service, one, in the beginning, may have to come to see the deity because it's recommended. One has to force oneself to come and see the deity. But after some time, one becomes generally attracted to seeing the form of the deity and enthusiastically chants and dances in front of the deity. And, Srila Prabhupada once said in one of his lectures that, this is the symptom of pure devotional service, that one becomes genuinely enthusiastic to see Krishna, to hear Krishna, to chant Krishna's names, to serve Krishna. One becomes genuinely enthusiastic to serve if one is doing that, not just as a matter of duty or just to put on a show, an external show. If one is really in the proper mood, one will become genuinely attracted and enthusiastic. And, on that occasion, Srila Prabhupada said to the devotees, and I can see that many of you are like that, because otherwise, why would you be taking on so much responsibility, serving Krishna day and night, unless you were genuinely enthusiastic and attracted to Krishna and his service? So, that is one point that Srila Prabhupada is making in this purport. And then he says the word infallible is significant. So the word infallible that's used in this verse is achyuta. It's a name for Krishna. It means one who does not fall. Many times Srila Prabhupada explains that we are chuta, we, the ordinary jivas, the marginal energy, have the tendency to fall down from the spiritual platform. And therefore, we are called chuta, fallen. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's another word that is used for fallible and infallible, or fallen or not fallen, and that's chara and akshara. You know, there's a verse in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna that there are two categories of living entities, the chara and the akshara, the fallible and the infallible. And those in the spiritual world, they are akshara, they are not fallen. And those in the material world, they are chara, or not fallen, and fallen. Those in the material world are chara, or fallen. So these words are used for fallible and infallible, chuta and achuta, chara and akchara. So Srila Prabhupada explains that fallible means, in the case of the ordinary jiva, the ordinary conditioned soul, when such a soul is in the material world, it has to take on a material body and it forgets its spiritual identity. So that is our situation. Krishna Bahir Mukahana Bhogavanchakari Nikatashta Mayatari Japati Adari. When the soul turns away from Krishna because of a desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, then Maya is there to capture it, to put it into a state of forgetfulness. So we forget our spiritual identity. Jivara Sarupahoi Krishnara Nitya Das. By nature, we are eternal servants of Krishna, but when we come to the material world, we forget that. Mamaivamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manasastan Indriyani Prakritishtani Karshati. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the soul is his part and parcel. The soul is actually part of God. It's one of God's energies. But it's subordinate. And if it misuses its free will, then it comes to the material world and has to struggle with a material body made of the material elements, which come in gross and subtle form. Krishna also explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Ichcha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarvabhutani samoham sarge yante parantapa. Because of ichcha, material desire, and dvesha, envy of me, the soul becomes covered by illusion, and then sarge yante parantapa, they enter into the material universe. So that is the state of the fallible conditioned souls. Now Krishna also comes to the material world, but when he comes in his original spiritual form. He is not fallible. He remains infallible even when he enters the material universes that are actually his creation. The only reason he comes here is to give us the opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. So he's like the governor who enters the prison house. If an ordinary citizen enters a prison house as a prisoner, he's in one condition. But when the governor of the state goes to the prison house, he's not under the same conditions that the prisoners are. The prisoners have to put on the prison dress. the material body that's subject to birth and death and the other changes that Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport. But when Krishna comes, he comes in his original spiritual form. So he remains in the infallible condition. But some people misunderstand. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, avajananti mamudha manushutanam ashritam parambhavamajananto mamabhuta maheshvaram. The foolish and the ignorant people, you know, think that when I come to this world, I take on a material body. That is not the fact, however. You know, Krishna says, such people, they're ignorant of my higher nature, my spiritual, my eternal spiritual nature. So that's another point that Srila Prabhupada makes in this purport. So when we take on a material form, we become subject to all different kinds of material designations. You know, we identify in terms of a certain gender. We identify in terms of a certain race, certain culture, certain nationality, certain family designation, and that family designation in India means gotra. You know, the idea is that everyone is descended from some original Prajapati in terms of their body, just like if we have, you know, we have our grandfather, our great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, if you trace back, you know, the paternal line, it will eventually, according to the Vedic system of thought, come to some original personality like Gautama or Atreya or Bhartaraj, some one of the original sons of Lord Brahma. So when you go to a temple in India and, you know, they want to perform some ritual for you, they ask your gotra. So when the devotees went with Srila Prabhupada to India, they asked him, they asked for our gotra, what should we say? And Srila Prabhupada said, you tell them Achyuta gotra, that you're from the family of Krishna, who is infallible, who never falls. And I remember once I was in India on a lecture tour, and the organizers of the tour took me to some big famous temple, and the pujaris there, they wanted to do some puja for me, so they asked, what is your gotra? And I thought, well, Srila Prabhupada says we should say Achyuta gotra, so I said Achyuta gotra, and they went, oh, very nice. So the verse again, the inhabitants of Dwarka were regularly accustomed to look upon the reservoir of all beauty, the infallible Lord, yet they were never satiated. So does anybody have any question? Yes. Ananda Kirtan.
thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. You're a big part of your class. You were describing how the living entities fall into this material world, and then we know that there's a big part of your class. You were speaking how the living entity falls into this material world, becomes conditioned, so on and so forth. And we know that there's innumerable spiritual planets one can fall from. But if, ISKCON is meant to give facilities for the conditioned souls to practice a bhakti yoga and go back home, back to Godhead, and our line is specifically designed to go towards Vrindavan. So I was just wondering, does the living entity becomes in contact with our movement? Can the living entity change his sarup and attain a form in Vrindavan when before he came to this material world he was in some other Vaikuntha planet?
There are different instances in Lord Chaitanya's Leela where devotees were part of his movement, but they would say to him, I think Murari Gupta was one such example. He felt very much attracted to Lord Rama. And he said, I'm trying to be a Krishna Bhakta, but I'm still attracted to Lord Rama. And my recollection is that, in his purports to those verses, Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya respected that, and recognized that his attraction was to Lord Ram. And similarly, there were instances when he encountered those who were devotees of Lord Narayan, and he respected that. So whatever one's eternal relationship is, then that soul's destiny, you could say. In the discussions that he had with a Brahmin in South India, the topic came up of Goddess Lakshmi, trying to enter into the Leela of Krishna with the gopis and the Rasa dance. But that wasn't her original position, so in one sense she couldn't enter. But in another sense, Lord Chaitanya explained, Lakshmi is an expansion of Radharani, and the gopis are expansions of Radharani, so in one sense, it's equal. Generally, we don't hear so much about souls changing their swarupas. Maybe it's possible. Krishna can do anything. He can transform his potencies one from the other. So one to the other, that's definitely stated by Srila Prabhupada. So given that Krishna is all powerful, he can do anything. But generally, we're told everyone has their Svarupa, their eternal relationship with Krishna, and it's just a question of uncovering that and remembering that and being restored to that position. Does anyone have anything to say about Brigupati?
Devavrata and I were reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 7. We came across a purport where, at least to my understanding, it pretty clearly said that living entities can progress to a higher rasa. I can't remember to use that word higher, but do you remember that when we were reading? Yeah, so we'll have to find it again. But I mean, I remember when we read it, we were both kind of like, what? Because, you know, we'd just been thinking, because we were just reading about Bhishma Dev and hearing those purports and how basically we had the understanding that you were just describing. But when we read that purport, we were both kind of like, wait, see, this sounds like something. Do you know what I'm talking about? You read it too. We'll find it and we'll bring it to your attention. I can't, you know, remember it clearly right now, but we'll find it again and we'll show it to you. But I have a question, if that's okay. Or do you want to have further discussion on this point?
Let's see if... on that point.
I do remember very clearly reading Srila Prabhupada stating in one of his purports that a devotee may enter, for example, into the Vaikuntha planets as differentiated from the Goloka planets and may develop a certain intensity in his rasa there, whether it be servitorship, for example, because usually it's servitorship or all in references there, but the intensity of servitorship may be so great that it may cause the person to become lifted or elated to the extent that he may rise to the position of one who may be, that's the word he used, transferred to Goloka, because he has actually become eligible to go there as a result of his... because as it's mentioned so often, is that nothing is stasis. Things rise and things tend to fall. Things are always in movement. And that's an example of that. Some go up, some may just kind of stay or go down a little bit. But yes, Srila Prabhupada did say that, because I took note of it. It was, I thought maybe there's a chance.
Anything else on this point?
There is one book that Divya Shakti published that says the early days in Vrindavan, and in that book there is a conversation. An Indian disciple asked Srila Prabhupada that if a living entity can actually move on to the highest planet from the... And then he said, yes, it's possible. Prabhupada said, it's possible. He just said that. So you can check that book, and there's conversations there, and this disciple asking Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, it's possible that you can move on. You can.
All right, anything else on this point? Okay. All right.
Okay. So,
then we'll...
In the purport, when Prabhupada says, no one... therefore is satiated by seeing the transcendental body of the Lord, because there are always manifestations of newer and newer beauties. The transcendental name, form, qualities, and entourage, etc., are all spiritual manifestations, and there is no satiation in chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no satiation in discussing the qualities of the Lord, and there is no limitation, etc. Okay, so is he referring to liberated souls? Because it seems to me that there are plenty of people who are satiated. What to speak of satiated? They're not even attracted by seeing the form of the Lord, hearing the glories of the Lord, chanting the name of the Lord. It seems like this applies to liberated souls. Liberated people who are beyond the influence of the three modes of material nature, they experience no satiation when they see the form of the Lord, when they hear the name of the Lord, when they discuss the qualities of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord, etc. But conditioned souls, as I said, what to speak of experience satiation, they're not even attracted in the first place. So it seems like this law of satiation is more because of the consciousness of the people than it is the the quality of Krishna. Because when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, Prabhupada says in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita that everybody, tons of people saw him, but only the Pandavas, Bhishma, Dev, and I think he says a handful of others, you know, actually appreciated that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So other people who were under the influence of Maya, they just thought of him as an ordinary person or, you know, different, according to some, where their consciousness was, they saw him in a different way, but they certainly didn't appreciate him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and experienced this no satiation phenomena. So
that's generally my understanding. When I was speaking, I was pointing out, I think I mentioned pure devotees in this conversation. I mean, this class where Srila Prabhupada was saying that if a person is genuinely attracted to devotional service and isn't doing it officially or just for some show, then that kind of spontaneous attraction not being satiated with seeing, you know, the deity and all of that, then that will manifest, you know, to the extent that one is subject to different offenses and things like that, then that, I mean, I can just speak for myself. I'm not always in the condition where, you know, I can feel, all right, this has gone on too long. I've seen too much. I need a break from this or that service.
So can I, as a follow, so this brings up, in my mind at least, a broader question. So in this purport then, is Prabhupada placing more importance and using this as an opportunity to glorify the Lord and giving that greater importance than technical accuracy? Because it seems like that statement, you know, that I read doesn't have technical accuracy, but it's okay if that's, you know, it's shadowed or eclipsed by the more important principle of he's taking an opportunity to glorify Krishna. And he's not as concerned about being completely 100%.
Well, I wouldn't put it like that.
Or is that my misunderstanding?
Yeah, because I think even if you read the whole purport, you know, it's explaining, I mean, he's specifically talking about the inhabitants of Dwarka, you know, which are eternal associates of Krishna, or souls that have qualified themselves to be present in his lila. So I think if you read the whole verse in purport, you would see that he's speaking about persons who are devotees on the level of the residents of Dwarka. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.